Hi, Rapids fans. This is Matt Pollard. You are listening to Holding the High Line, and it is 12:31 p.m. Mountain Time on Friday, May 17th, 2024. I am here in the parking lot at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. I am getting ready to head out to an away day for the Rocky Mountain Cup tomorrow against RSL, and I'm at Dick's Sporting Goods Park because I am lucky enough to be traveling with the team. I will be on the charter with the first team, technical staff, etc., to Salt Lake and back. I will be staying close to the team hotel, and the Colorado Rapids and I have we've worked it out, and I'm going to be embedded in the team bubble for this weekend for the Rocky Mountain Cup. I'm extremely excited, I'm extremely privileged, and I'm super pumped to bring all this content to you. I've been really, really quiet about this. I haven't said anything publicly, so this is an HTHL exclusive. You are listening to this, you are the first people to know publicly, not only, well, I'll be covering the game in person, so you will, by the time you're listening to this on Sunday, Monday, the 19th or 20th, you will have known that I attended the game, but this is the first time I will be speaking openly about me traveling with the team. I've spoken in passing with a few different club officials about the possibility of this and whether or not it was possible. And I had a really good conversation with someone high up at the club at the Inter-Miami game, which I attended about 6 weeks ago now. And they said if it was a possibility and we could come to an agreement on what was on the record, off the record, and the logistics and everything, and the timing made sense, they'd love to make it happen. Given the fact that the Unified team is traveling and will be playing at RSL, given all the stuff happening with the supporters, with C38, traveling fans and everything, this was the weekend to do it, to say nothing of the fact that that the Rapids are playing Real Salt Lake on my 34th birthday. So we were finally able to make it happen, and I'm just super grateful and super excited. I could not think of a better way to spend my birthday than covering this team and sharing all this content with you and being a part of the Rapids community. And the fact that I get to do it, I think, as the first independent member of the media to be inside the team bubble and show you some of what that looks like, how the sausage is made, the inside baseball stuff. I'm just really, really pumped. So let me get out of my car now and meet with the team, and I'll be on the team bus and on my way to Denver International Airport, and you'll be hearing from me soon. Hi, Rapids fans. This is Red. It is 1:51 p.m., May 17th, here on our Sun Country charter flight here at Denver International Airport, seat 25A, if you're wondering. It's mostly windows and aisle seats. Nobody is automatically assigned a middle seat if they don't want one here on our flight. Most of the players have taken the window, in case you were wondering, but packed up here. I'm towards the back of the plane with mostly staff and the Rapids Unified team. The players and more technical people are in the front 40% of the plane. So got some snacks here. This was the easiest or the quickest security check that I had ever. Within about 5 minutes of walking through the doors at the separate building for the executive terminal, within about 5 minutes we were walking out and going out of the plane. 10 at the absolute minutes, but it was probably under 5 if I were to time it. For those of you who don't know, charter flights go through a separate terminal, so they don't go through the main building and then go to a gate in A, B, or C at Denver International Airport. There's a separate executive terminal that has a very streamlined system set up for them to process a lot of people through relatively quickly and safely. So it was really only about 5 minutes between walking in. I was one person selected for the security, and then we walked out and we were directly on the tarmac to get on the plane. So that's a really good setup, as it should be, given how much money all these MLS owners are shelling out for charter flights now here for MLS here in 2024. So I'm going to get in some of snacks, got my seatbelt on, and we're going to get on our way to Salt Lake City. And we'll see if Lawless Abubakar comes to the back of the plane to invite me to play a game of Uno or something. Pork just came to the back of the plane to say hello to everyone, addressed the Unified team, said hi to me.
One hour and 2 minutes into Salt Lake City. Before we can close the boarding door, we now need everyone seated so we can make that count for weight balance. So please make sure your seat back and tray table are in the upright and locked position. All aisle armrests and movable headrests are lowered, and your carry-on items remain stowed. Your cell phones can be used now at this time. Again, we want to thank you for flying with us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow night.
Hello, Rapids fans. This is Matt. It is 5:03 p.m. on Friday. Just got settled in here at my accommodations off of Temple Street in downtown Salt Lake City. I have a decent enough view of all 10 buildings here downtown. My accommodations does have some wall art in the form of wallpaper that looks like mountains. But no actual framed artwork, so I'll put that on social media for the highliners that care about HTHL's hotel room art review. But yeah, it looks very mountainous. So I've got some mountains looking out my window, which is west-facing. So let's talk about the charter flight. I mentioned what it was like getting on the flight, what going through security was like. Obviously, was much less full than a typical commercial flight that you would be on. As you go back to front, it was technical staff. So Porrick Smith was there along with the coaching staff, and then it was the players. For the most part, they were relatively spread out. Like, I don't think there was a single row except maybe some of the unified teams, team rows behind me that had three people to a row of three on one side of the aisle. But for the most part, there were some players that had a row, a section all to themselves. And if they were busy, it was pretty much they were scattered between, window and aisle, and then someone alone in the middle seat, the row behind that, and then window, aisle in the third row in that section. So relatively spacious for the players who need more space, and guys like Lal Sabubakar and Zach Steffen, who are tall people and need leg room. We were allowed one carry-on, one checked bag. So I had that. There were members of staff who only had, one of those. Let's see, what else? Lots of players and staff actually drove to the airport. So they have their own, parking lot for the executive section of Denver International Airport. And I don't think you pay for parking, or I imagine with how much money the club is paying for charter flights that maybe that's already covered. I can imagine it's convenient for some players to get off the plane and then immediately just go into their car and drive home, especially if they live between the airport and Dix. I could see where that would be super inefficient. In terms of their time, especially when you're getting back 2-3 in the morning, if you're flying, you know, immediately after a game. But it was a relatively seamless process, and I can see why not just having the entire plane to themselves and then the convenience for what that means in terms of the resting recovery of the players, but that just logistically it's so much simpler and it's less stress and less time, which then allows the players to perform at a higher level and the club to function at a better level. Once we landed, we got off and there were buses right there on the tarmac. So between, in terms of number of feet that I had to walk between getting off the plane, going down the stairs, and then walking kind of around the front of the plane to get to the bus that I was on, it was a couple hundred feet, if that, 300 feet at the absolute most. There was a bus for staff, which I was on. Coaching staff was there, comms, digital, physio, equipment team as well. There was a separate bus for the players and then a separate bus for the unified team. The unified team folks is getting absolutely decked out in terms of they're being treated like their own first team in terms of the amenities and the support they have and having their own bus and their own section on the plane and food and snacks and everything. So the club's doing a good job of taking care of them, and say what you will about the Colorado Rapids and how they've handled certain things from the first team standpoint. That absolutely is a force for good in this community and something that's bringing people together who I think need it and have that sense of community and that sense of support, including having their very own bus, just like the players, not the staff. It was, I will say that logistically, everything is set up to, I think, firstly prioritize the time and efficiency of the coaching staff who have meetings or other things and prep that they need to work on, and making and optimizing for the convenience of the players in terms of their time and physical energy efforts. So in terms of their time and movement and energy. So for example, the flight on the way back tomorrow, directly after the game, will be the internal cabin temperature will be decreased and it'll be much colder, or I don't know how much colder. I'll let you know. But that is being done to allow for better recovery. So I think charter flights are a good thing for the team, and certainly logistically, I can see where it takes a little bit more work from the staff, but makes things way easier on the players as well. And it's, so it's super interesting to just see how the team and everyone interacts when they know that it's just them and they're not under any specter of being observed or have any responsibilities in terms of being part of the general public because they're on a commercial flight where they're just strangers in terms of going through security rather than being handled specifically by their charter setup. So for example, the all the flight attendants and the captain knew what they were there for and who they were and everything. I was not able to get a recording of them saying it, but there was one point where the flight attendant gets on the PA system on the plane and says, "Hello, Colorado Rapids," and says, "You know, I wish you luck and we'll see you tomorrow, hopefully after a win." So the players are taken care of in that regard. And the fact that the league's doing this is fantastic. The fact that the MLSPA had to push so hard for it, and that was a struggle in the collective bargaining negotiations a few years ago, is disappointing for me. But we're here now in this really nice downtown hotel, and the players and everybody will get a chance to settle in. And then we'll see if I'm able to talk to anyone who wants to tell me certain things at a dinner at a bar. I've texted Brian Dunseth and asked for some downtown shenanigan recommendations. So we'll see what he comes back with. And then I'll get up tomorrow. Got a few interviews not related to the first team prepped for that. I'll get some breakfast and then get some lunch. And then we'll head down south to Sandy for Rocky Mountain Cup leg two. Hi, Rapids fans. It's 11:33 p.m. Just got some dinner. We're watching the first overtime of the Avs game. I do not know who won. We're currently in the intermission between the first and the second overtime. So we had someone who I was with who was wearing team gear, and we were crossing the street as pedestrians, and a car drove by and yelled RSL at us. So the rivalry is felt here downtown in Salt Lake City going into the Rocky Mountain Cup game for Rivalry Week tomorrow. So feeling good. I am going to change into my night clothes and get into bed, and hopefully the Avs score soon so that I can go to bed at a reasonable hour. Got a 7 a.m. alarm to do some go for a run, and then I have many interviews for content that will be upcoming as well. So let me get some Z's. Super excited about my birthday, about Rocky Mountain Cup. And you're listening to this and you already know what happened, but come live vicariously as I experience whatever happens. And hopefully this ages well and not poorly. Good night.
Good morning, Rapids fans. Happy birthday, Matthew. It's 7:34 a.m. Apologies, Avalanche fans. I was asleep, but I just checked the score and I saw what happened. So, unfortunate ending for the Colorado Avalanche, and to have it be Matt Duchene who scores the winner in overtime, extremely disappointing. Hopefully that is not an omen for other KSC teams, for Rapids fans and certainly Arsenal fans tomorrow. It's the morning. I'm awake. I'm functional. I am going to be 34 years old at 6:01 p.m. Mountain Time, and I'm going to go for a run, and then I have people to talk to at breakfast. See you soon.
What does a typical match day look like when you guys fly in the day before? Like, what's your schedule today?
Today will, it's pretty light this morning. The players will do like an activation. There's going to be some video this morning because the quick turnaround.
Yeah.
The players get, I mean, we don't want to overload them with too much information on the day of the game, but because of quick turnaround, the rest and recovery, you know, there was two different groups training on Thursday because some people had played, some people hadn't. Match day minus one, you're traveling, so you don't want to make too much of a cognitive load on that day as well. So
yesterday was light then, typically is.
Yeah. So today's going to be, there's going to be some video this morning. They do prefer if the players, you know, do get up out of bed, you know, and go for a walk around and, you know, taking, you know, obviously get their calories and food that they need in. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's on the, for the mind, you just want to shoot the players with a little bit of information, a few more reminders, and then let them sort of rest and in their own way. They're all different how they prepare for games. Mm-hmm. You know, there may be some players today that just want to sort of not speak to anybody and just do their own thing, and there's players that might want to play cards together or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it's totally a different preference to different people. Mm-hmm. It's been good to work with, yeah. Mm-hmm.
When you guys are in meetings and you have two coaches named Chris, how do you differentiate each other? How often?
Three. There's Sharpie.
Oh my goodness! I completely. Yeah. Well, you can call him Sharpie though.
Well, we can Sharpie. Yeah.
How do you not get confused which Chris you're talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah. No. I mean, we. Yeah. Probably just have to stare at him when you're looking. But yeah, no, it's quite funny. There's three Chrises at times. So yeah, we're lucky with Sharpie. Sharpie's got the. You know, there's no nicknames for the other two Chrises. So yeah, just have to. Look him in the eye as you're talking, really. Yeah,
well, I suppose we could call Chris Armas boss.
Yeah, yeah.
Gaffer.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah
know
sometimes, like, you know, it's really, really weird, actually, because some people don't want to be, you know, I remember Robin's first day, Anthony Hudson, it was always, we called him Gaffer. Mm-hmm. And I went up to Robin on his first day and said to Rob, what do you want us to call you? And he goes, well, my name's Robin. Do you mm-hmm. know what I mean? And it wasn't even a thought. Like, he wouldn't want us to call him boss.
Yeah.
So I didn't ask Chris Armas the question, same question, because not that Robin wanted to make me feel weird, but like I just asked him because of Anthony's situation.
Yeah.
But I think knowing Chris, I think he'd rather be called Chris, you know?
So, yeah. I've struggled with how to ask current players who played under Robin this, but I've asked some who've since left the team. So I'll ask you now, since Robin's not here. My first training that I went to, there was a training session, and then I think it was 2 hours, and then Robin's unveiling. So I actually spoke to Robin after his first training session and then in a more formal setting. And so just like you, I go up with, so like with foreign players, for example, the first time I spoke to Moise, I said, Moise Bombito, am I pronouncing that correctly? So I go up to Robin and I say, hey, Robin, like, do you have any preference? Do you want to be coached? Do you want to be Gasol? Or, you know, and he said, anything but a**hole and we're good. And it was before I was fumbling with my phone, so he knew that I wasn't recording it. I burst out laughing. There's nobody within 20 feet of us.
Yeah.
Do you believe me that Robin, does that sound like something Robin would say?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I think in a head coach's life, especially, you know, that you're either great or things aren't going so well, and yeah, it's tough for you, and you know, people have different opinions, and I think that's the joy of football. I think anybody who comes into our building and watches, they have their version in their head of who they would play in the team and mm-hmm. who they think should be in the team, what players they like, so everyone's sort of a football manager, football coach when mm-hmm. they come to a game. If they show that much interest and they're into it, then they're going to have an opinion, and that's what football is.
Yeah, I heard the British football cliche just recently that derbies have their own ecosystem. Is that something you agree? What is it about, you know, Rocky Mountain Cup, I feel like, has its own ecosystem. You know, no matter who's up or down, what's on the table, RSL finds a way to rise to the occasion. And at least historically, not last time, hopefully not tonight, the Rapids find a way to mess up. What creates that?
It's just atmosphere. Yeah, it's just, I mean, it starts from academy level, junior level, you know, they're the most local team to play against mm-hmm. that have the same, you know, big team in an MLS competition. Mm-hmm. And you know, I remember playing in lots of Wolves West Brom derbies when I was a player, and there is genuine, you know, you don't like the other organisation because they want to be better than you. You want to be better than them, and it mm-hmm. creates this vibe that you have to win those games. Mm-hmm. And there is added pressure for everybody on the day and on the night. But, you know, it's something that the lads should really thrive mm-hmm. with and take on board. And, you know, I know I used to try and get the first tackle in those games to get the crowd going and, mm-hmm. and just to show you're up for the fight. And I think that's been evident this year. You've seen a group of players that are working for each other. Mm-hmm. So, I feel like tonight, you know, the vibe of it is going to be, we're just going to do what we do again. We put 100% effort in every game. We want to see the lads putting the work in, and you know, in general this year they've done mm-hmm. that really well.
Yeah. Cole's potentially got an opportunity to become a Derby player. Were you a big Derby, you know, did you get up for going to the Hawthorns?
I mean, it's hard. It's intimidating, you know, every time I think the Wolves players touch the ball, you get booed, you know. it's not, you know, it's slightly more intimidating than I feel. But Cole is he's having a fantastic season. He's always goal dangerous, you know, obviously scoring the winner in the last game. He'll be replaying that moment in his head, mm-hmm. I'm sure, all day today, and visualising him doing it again. I know that that's the type of character he is. I think, you know, if you can get a group of players that play like it's a derby every game, mm-hmm. then you have a chance.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I feel this group of players will always give you, you know, they're giving us everything, mm-hmm. And at the moment, so we've just got to strive for that. We've got to, you know, show them weekly mm-hmm. where the bar is at, and they've got to continue to do that. So I'm not saying this game's not going to be any different, because it is, but the attitude of the players, if you know when they walk over the line, they're a together group, they're going to run for each other, they're going to back each other up if you know, there's physical situations, then I believe this group are ready to do that.
Yeah. Robin got a new job in Connecticut in Next Pro. Have you spoken to him? What do you think about him finally getting back in?
Yeah, I think it's more of a consultancy role rather than a job. I haven't spoken to him for a couple of weeks, but we keep in touch by text. He's doing a lot of traveling. He follows his daughter at the moment as well, mm-hmm. she's an aspiring young player who's doing really well, so he goes and sort of follows where she is at times. So yeah, it's great. Robin's got so much to offer. Obviously I see different styles and of management and philosophy with the managers I've worked for, but mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the time with Robin. Obviously he's become a personal friend as well, mm-hmm. so things are tough there, you know, when something, you know, I've stayed on now for the coach who brought me from, you know, into the country.
Yeah.
He then left. I was then thinking, a new coach has come in. He knows nothing about me. With Robin, and we ended up having a great relationship. Still have. And then Chris comes in, and it's the same thing. I feel it's the same. I've got a similar sort of chemistry and moving in the same direction mm-hmm. as I was with Robin. Yeah. So. It's great Rob's back in the game. He's got so much to offer, and I don't think it'll be long until he's coaching back in the league.
Yeah. You, last one, Neil. Thank you so much for the time. What do you hate more, RSL song or Boing Boing?
Oh, that's close. That is close. They're both really annoying.
I'm yes.
They're both really annoying. I mean, to the present day, I mean, I've obviously stayed in contact with Wolves a lot. I spent a lot of my career there, mm-hmm. You know, I'm a present day moment and where the world takes me, so definitely the RSL song is going to grate my teeth today, so mm-hmm. Let's hope we can be smiling at sort of 10 o'clock tonight.
Hi Rapids fans, it is 1:57 p.m. Mountain Time here. Had a couple interviews with players and staff. Got to chat for Pork for a little bit. You'll be hearing about that in the coming days or weeks. And I'm about to go meet up with Fernando Varela, who's working on fan engagement and supporter culture for the club. So I'm going to speak to him about what's going on with that. And then I'll be joining him and a few other people on the first of two buses that the club has made available for everyone getting down to Sandy, Utah. For the game, and then I'll be hopefully seeing several of you at the tailgate. Wherever the Rapids are playing, if there's a bunch of Rapids fans, whether it's in Commerce City, Salt Lake City, or the middle of nowhere, a tailgate must happen. And regardless of what happens, it will be undefeated, and I look forward to joining and keeping that undefeated streak going. What's your official title?
Fan Engagement Specialist.
Fan Engagement, okay, and what all does that mean?
Essentially, anything that has to do with the fans, the community, kind of grassroots efforts to grow the club falls in my wheelhouse. So I work a lot with C38. I meet a lot with Dave and a few of the leadership members of the Mile High Locos and C38 just to get their feedback, talk with them, see how we can build their space up and their culture up. I also handle a lot of Hispanic outreach at the club now, so making lots of connections, meetings, hearing feedback, just trying to build ties and build up that community in the stadium as well.
What's going on with that? Because I feel like that's been, I see that as a pain point, and as a gringo who does a podcast with another gringo, we have long acknowledged that that's been a pain point for the club. Like, our old joke that we had is that the club was super willing to market downtown or to, like, the yuppies in Rhino, but anybody west of Federal, that was a disconnect.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's been really great so far from my few months with the club. There does seem to be a lot of members of the Hispanic community that have been wanting to get more involved and just didn't really know how to. So, for example, we've had some good contacts with the people at KBNO Radio. KBNO Radio is the pronunciation. But people are just happy to help, happy to get connected. I've been doing interviews on Spanish radio stations where I get to talk about the club and tell them about, you know, some of our theme nights or, you know, some of our traditions or rivalries or, you know, just kind of talk about the club. And people are excited to hear about that. And so that's been really positive. We met with the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, Denver Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, a little while back, and they are also super happy to hear from us and want to get more involved. And then just a lot of grassroots stuff, a lot of, you know, we have a new webpage on the Rapids website that's all in Spanish, which I think is the first page on the Rapids site that's in Spanish.
Okay.
And it's just like a Rapids 101 in Spanish. It gives you all the information about the club, the traditions, the supporter group, you know, the stadium, what you can do and what you can see in the stadium. And so we're just trying to be very all-encompassing of, like, welcoming and inclusive to different communities. And just, you know, there's been a lot of little things that we've been doing. I think for the Open Cup, we hosted an event, one of the Open Cup games, where we invited some members of the Colorado Soccer Association and the Colorado Premier League.
Yeah.
And we had Azteca out there after the, as kind of a thank you to them. And just kind of, again, building ties, building bonds, showing that, you know, we want to be part of the Colorado soccer community on a cultural level, not just, you know, trying to sell tickets. That's not really the point of the a lot of the initiatives that I've been part of. It's been more about, like, hey, we want to grow the culture, grow the community, and be a part of the community.
Yeah. What events are you doing outside of, obviously game day is a significant portion, but I mean, what are you doing that's not radio hits, or, you know, is there stuff in the community, or are there more events as well, stuff like that?
Yeah, so in preseason we hosted a Hispanic happy hour.
Yes.
That was targeted just, you know, it's part of one of those initiatives just to build relationships and build ties with the community that's not transactional, and just kind of come hang out, meet members of the front office, meet members of the Rapids community, mingle, have a drink, hang out. So we definitely want to do more of that. That's not super soccer focused, but it's about the community. It's about, you know, having fans build relationships with each other, build relationships with the club. We definitely want to do a lot around Copa America coming up. So even non-Rapids games, you know, we're going to be hosting watch parties for Mexico games, for USA games. As the knockouts come, we're probably going to do a Copa America final watch party. I think with my role, there's been a lot of opportunities to host different Hispanic-centric events and just, again, like, build ties there, because from what I've heard and what I've been told in the lead-up to my role was that there wasn't a lot of that over the last couple of years. So just definitely just trying to build connections, build ties, and turn those into opportunities where there's collaboration between new fans, old fans, and the club.
Yeah. How do you feel about how the club's gone about dealing with everything from the C38 boycott? You know, obviously, you know, KSC's spent more money. There's more zeros on some transfer fee checks that, you know, Pork was writing. And, but, you know, at the same time, I still think, you know, there's still some fans that are, I can say this, maybe you can as well, bunch of fans who just hate Stan and Josh or think that they need to spend more money or that they don't care and that they're not at games. And then so there's that cynicism and nihilism that exists about the club that exists in pockets but obviously was paramount in September of last year. There's only so much that you can do about that. There's only so much Horik can do about that. But that's still an emotional, like, are you guys addressing that directly? Do you feel that you're mending that? What more work is there on that front?
I think just for my role, again, what I can do is just talk to the fans and get their feedback and do what I can to, mm-hmm. to address as much as I can. I go out to the tailgates and to the stadium with my KSC badge and all of that, and I'm just very transparent about mm-hmm. what my goals are and what I want the club to become, and so. I haven't heard too much feedback from the fans in terms of Josh and Stan, but mm-hmm. I have heard a lot about, you know, what can be done in the future mm-hmm. in terms of a game day experience. Yeah. What can be done for Pride, the Pride match next year. Mm-hmm. You know, all of those things that I can touch on the soccer side of things and the soccer community side of things are things mm-hmm. that, you know, that's. Yeah. What I can do.
Yeah, I think it would, the feedback that I would give, I think the fan base didn't feel understood or appreciated, or like that they understood that like what was happening for them was unacceptable last year. And look, I talked to Porik and he can be very candid with me, and you know, he's a certain way at the podium, which I completely understand. But I think the fact that your role existed and now you're hired and you're being involved with that, the fact that the head coach understands that and didn't need to be Chris has actively pursued that rather than needing someone to show him a way or someone to coax him towards this matters, I think shows that the fan base just wants to be understood and wants to feel appreciated. And so in that regard, I think the club's done a lot of really good work of making sure they get the fan base. Still some work to do on that front. Obviously, you know, if the season ends up going to crap, fans are going to feel a certain way about that. But so that would be a lot of steps in the right direction. We got a lot of way to go, and that starts tonight. What do away trips look like for you in terms of what you're doing with the fans? I was in Miami, obviously. I was late, so I didn't get to join in the tailgate, but I know there's some stuff for tonight. But I mean, is there more of that? How are you guys engaging and providing a platform for away traveling fans to show up and coalesce?
Yeah, so I think part of my role, I definitely want to encourage as much away travel as possible. For the Miami game, I worked very hard to make sure that section was full because there was a lot of interest, but there was not a lot of there wasn't really a set system to get, you know, away tickets into those fans' hands that wanted to go. So I wrote like a whole document on the importance of away travel and you know how we should, you know, organize this, and luckily that section was full. Mm-hmm. For this match, you know, the supporters play a part in the match. They can help us win 3 points. They can bring energy to our players. Mm-hmm. And so having them here for the Rocky Mountain Cup is important. And so we also, like, did everything we could to make sure that C38 understood how important they are and got as many of them as we could over here. I think nothing is concrete right now, but I want to continue to encourage that and maybe get some fans out to the Austin game at the end of the season. I'll chat with C38 and the Locos about that probably later in the year, but how can we encourage their members to travel and attend that game? That's probably going to be a big game that decides where we finish in the standings, if we're hosting playoff games, you know, that sort of thing. So I've definitely been trying to encourage as much of that as possible. In terms of when they're traveling, they have their set system of they like to tailgate, they like to hang out. For me, it's more about I want to be there. So right after this interview, we're going to take mm-hmm. the bus and go hang out with C38 and hang at their tailgate. Mm-hmm. I just want to be there. I want to show face. I want to talk to them. I want to hear if they have any feedback. Sometimes they don't have feedback. Sometimes they just want to hang out, and they try and convince me to have a beer with them at the tailgate. I'm like, well, I'm working, but maybe I'll sneak a beer. You know what I mean? Like, it's just about showing that, you know, we're there and that we care and that, you know, I definitely care, and if they do need to chat with me about anything, if they do have any ideas, I'm available. You know, I want to make myself as available as possible.
I think a great long-term goal, I remember, so I covered my first actual beat in person when I was finishing up grad school, in St. Louis, and so I was covering St. Louis FC, and in the USL Championship at the time, St. Louis had a really good track record of, like, they always had at least one away fan or, like, a small group of them, and there became, like, this trend of, like, there was a flag that, like, got passed, so, like, that flag was at every single away game.
Yeah.
It was, like, being mailed or handed off to whomever was going, and so it became this meme of, like, they're playing the Rochester Rhinos on a random Wednesday, and there's a guy from St. Louis who lives in Buffalo who drove down to the game and the flag's there, so it's like random Luligan. Yeah. And so, like, long-term goal or a metric that I'm artificially assigning you is, can we get to a point where, like, is there a C38, is there a Rapids fan tailgate in the parking lot for every single Rapids away game in one season? If you can get to that at some point, like, we will have succeeded.
I would love that. And I love the idea of, like, a traveling item, whether that's a banner or a flag or something, just kind of some sort of ritualistic item that travels with the supporters everywhere. I would love something like that.
Yeah. Fernando, I appreciate you. Let's go sneak some beers.
Let's go sneak some beers. Yes.
Hey, Rapids fans. We are on the bus, mostly with equipment staff and comms and media and digital people. No technical staff. I'm not sitting next to Chris Armas. But we're here on the bus now, and we're headed out to Sandy, Utah. And Fernando and I are going to go meet up with C38, maybe sneak a beer, maybe not. That's off the record. And we'll go from there. It's Rocky Mountain Cup match day. Let's go. And we're here at America First Field, formerly known as The Riot. Stadium's nice. I'm just walking around the ground to get a feel of the logistics. Pass by the media entrance. I've seen the location of where C38 will be tailgating, so I'll be there in about 15-20 minutes when that gets started. Nice outdoor stadium. It looks bigger on television from what I've seen than I've seen now in person. The roof's kind of cool with the wave thing going on. I prefer the, like, stacked tiered mountain look of Dick's Sporting Goods Park. It does look like the RSL roof, however, covers more and a greater percentage of the seats, so I'm sure for Rapids fans who like the afternoon games, that's something that could have been done better for Dick's Sporting Goods Park. In the northwest corner of the ground, they have this cool kind of step walk-up area, not too dissimilar from that one stand at Aston Villa, at Villa Park, where you kind of have the cool stairs walking up to then get into the ground. So that's kind of a cool feature. And they have the insignia of the crown logo is on everything in areas where there isn't just the straight RSL crest. So that is a feature that works for Real Salt Lake. Other thoughts. So the tailgate is going to be in this kind of fan fest-like area that has a big open grassy area and then some inflatable games and such. Appears very family friendly, maybe a little bit more Mormon influenced, I'm not sure. Downtown Salt Lake City, I should point out, very small relative to what we have in Denver. Walked by some of the Mormon buildings. People were reasonably nice. They said hi to me. Nobody tried to convert me, so that was a net benefit relative to some of my previous experiences with members of the Church of Latter-day Saints. But the closest thing I saw to a decent Mexican restaurant was Blue Iguana. Nothing against Blue Iguana, but you can tell it's there for the clientele. People were reasonably nice, relatively well-dressed, a little bit conservative, but Salt Lake City, not for me. I think I'll stay living in Colorado personally. Rapids fans, it is 5:38 p.m. Mountain Time. I am walking here on the south side here at the Riot. Just walked around the stadium from the tailgate. Nice to see all of you who I interacted with. Shout out to Logan. Shout out to 3-year season ticket holders, Scott and Kelly. Shout out to the grill master for the dev dogs, even though it was not Devin who was grilling the dogs. And I apologize, grill master, I could not remember your name. Lots of really good conversation, excitement, and I'd say measured, contained optimism and underlying feelings of existential dread. I would say, was the general consensus for how fans are feeling about that. I realize you're listening to this and the game has already happened, so you know whether or not those feelings aged well or aged poorly, but come continue to live vicariously through me experiencing a result that you already know. Got some really good feedback from fans on how they feel about tonight, how they feel about the state of the team, what's going well on the field, off the field from a supporter's standpoint, combined with my conversation with Fernando. That's going to turn into some content for HTHL and Burgundy Wave. As I was walking around the stadium, I was passing by a group of RSL fans. There's lots of little parking spaces from businesses and other lots in the area. I don't know if they took a bus or if they parked there, but so there were a group of RSL fans, and I think one of them recognized me because he muttered, "Holding the dumb line with Rabbi and Fred." So this is Fred Pollard, I suppose, going off of what I heard last night when me and someone in club colors were crossing the street back from the sports bar, chanting RSL, "The banter is real, folks." So I'm walking up to the media entrance now, so let's get it, and you will hear me inside. Hello, Rapids fans. It is 6:53 p.m. Mountain Time, right around 40 minutes from kickoff. Media entrance, pretty straightforward. I should say you have to go up an elevator that is very, very slow. It's much slower than the press elevator at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, and there's no stairs option. But once you get up to the fourth floor, it's mostly suite level. There's suites on one side. We're more to the right side of the field, so we're a little bit off-center relative to what's available at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. It's a super long hallway that's semi-outside. There's some bathrooms. There's the media area for the first team front office space for both the home team and the away team. I walked by the TV room area where Marcelo Balboa is doing the call in Spanish for MLS Season Pass. And then also there's the English language one. So Max Bratos and Brian Dunseth are in the house. I see there's probably a solid, I think there's at least 50 Rapids fans. They're chanting right now. I don't know how well you can hear them over, but the Rapids players just took the field. Press box area decent here in RSL for a newer stadium than Dick's. It's a mostly outdoor seating area in terms of what's available to the press people. There's maybe two rows of, say, 15 seats, so there's less capacity, but we're under the underhang of the roof here on the west side of the stadium. Bit of a nicer view compared to the west view that we have from Dick's Sporting Goods Park. I can see, I don't know if that is Wasatch, the actual peak, the not quite 12,000 foot mountain to the southeast of the Riot, but got a nice view of the mountain to our right. We got a huge video board that doesn't appear to have that many broken pixels. I should say the red seats are slightly faded. They're a little bit old, so not quite the pink seats from that season of Sunderland Till I Die. So decent press setup for a smaller club. Excuse me, the home team has just taken the field, if you haven't heard that announcement. What else is there? To the south end, you've got the supporter section that has some standing room in the front, and the others, a decent use of that space, I would say, although the way the bleachers are set up, like, it's not a part connected to the rest of the stadium. So decent MLS stadium. Roof looks kind of cool. I like our roof better. There's probably not a bad seat in the house. It's not that different or that much better than Dick's Sporting Goods Park, other than the improved technology that happened between one stadium being built and the other, for my money. And the giant video board that they've added as well that we don't have. Let me come inside to talk about the lineups. Hopefully it is much quieter now here. So just one change for Chris Armas' side. Calvin Harris is in for Kevin Cabral, who is on the bench. Otherwise, the lineup is unchanged. So I think it'll be Calvin on the right, Omir on the left, and everything else as it is. And I don't know that, other than for fatigue, that I would have made any other changes. So maybe Connor Ronan comes in for one of the next couple of games with some of the fixture congestion. Maybe a Jonathan Lewis. Maybe Kevin Cabral swaps in and out with the other two wingers. But I don't know. I don't know that I would have done a lineup any different based on what we've seen in games. Lamine Diak is, again, not in the not in the lineup. It is Connor Ronan and former RSL man Jasper Lofelsend, who are on the bench. That move isn't working out. He's not playing. He's clearly, from what he does in training, not able to unseed Oliver Larraz. Barring a miracle, I don't see how he is worth the option to buy at the end of July, and I do not see him being retained permanently by the Colorado Rapids this summer as of right now. Rapids fans, halftime here at America First Field. Real Salt Lake 2, Colorado Rapids 2. Goals from Bassett, Navajo, Chicho Arango, and Gomez in that order. Madness. A half of two halves, or I guess two 22.5 minute periods, if you will. Rapids started out really well. Pressing was good. Derbies have their own ecosystem. This game is madness. It's halftime, and I'm already exhausted and excited and entertained, and I have no idea what's going to happen in the second half. RSL shows that when push comes to shove in this matchup, they are capable of providing intensity and overcoming difficulties, and the Rapids still have work to do in terms of managing being in a good position. I think we're in for a crazy second half. I think RSL is going to come at them. Colorado needs to find another level if they're going to do more than barely scrape by for a draw in this game. But what an exciting half. And I don't know how MLS 360 and the guys at the MLS Apple headquarters doing the wrap-up show don't have this game, you know, one of the top matches that they talk about for the night. The Rocky Mountain Cup has goals in it. It is exciting. It is crazy. It is competitive. And it is relevant in terms of what's happening on the field and where both teams are in the standings. I will speak to you at full time. Full time from First America Field. Real Salt Lake 5, Colorado Rapids 3. I don't know if you can hear me right now, Rapids fans. It's so loud in here. Georgia gave the Rapids life 11 minutes into the second half, but then RSL did what they did and they put on the pressure, and it looks like Colorado was dealing with it. And, you know, in the final minutes, I thought, you know, this is going to be Mormon hell for the final 5 minutes plus stoppage time. Chicho Arango cleans up on a header on the goal line off a goal line fire drill. Gomez scores. Anderson Julio scores. It all comes apart at the seams as Colorado couldn't deal with transition play and maybe the emotions and the pressure of the moment and the crowd being on top of them and RSL being on top of them. This is an instant classic. What a wild game. A wild game and an instant classic in a bad and disappointing way. And if nothing else, it comes down to a decisive third leg that Colorado has home field advantage on. But I was thinking there for a minute, I was about to get one of the best birthday presents that I've gotten in my life. And what historically has happened in this fixture happened.
We're here with head coach Chris Armas. We'll start off with the general thoughts and then open it up to media.
The only thing I'm going to say to start here is, you know, we didn't lift a trophy tonight, but our guys played like champions. We said we were going to come here and go for it, and we did that. The guys came out and did that. They set the tone and had a good response at halftime even, and we're 2 minutes away from stoppage time. So for that, I'm really proud of the team. And those behaviors and those performances and those have to come before you lift the trophy. You know, you don't need to lift the trophy to become a winner. So I saw a bunch of winners out there tonight. I'm really proud of my team.
Matt Pollard, Burgundy Wave.
Chris, thanks for having me. Back and forth game. You know, Colorado starts out up 2-0. It's 2-2 at halftime. Score in the early on in the second half, and then ultimately they end up losing, you know, 5-3. What wasn't there in terms of protecting the lead, and maybe whether it was lack of composure or defense that allowed, you know, those moments to slip away?
Well, listen, our guys came out after halftime and we reset it a bit and we got back on the front foot, got the goal, and then we're 2 minutes away, right? It's our third game in a week. We had some tired legs in some spots, and we were trying to squeeze as much as we could out of Georgie. You know, he let us know he had five more minutes in him at some point and had the decision to make the last sub, and we just had to, all the little fires that would have popped up in the last 5 to 10 minutes, we had to just put out those fires, which, you know, the equalizer comes in a set piece, a second phase, and this is part of football, that you know, when you take some pressure at times, you do all you can, and you just have to put out those fires, which gives Salt Lake credit. They pushed the game. I give them a lot of credit. They had a lot of fighting spirit. It was never going to be easy, but we got close. We got close, and I'm really proud of my team.
Two fire drills, you know, inside the six on the, I guess it was the second goal, or the first Arango goal in the first half, and then the one off the corner that I think made it 3-3. Was there something there that you saw that was problematic or that needs to be addressed?
I don't think so, Matt. You know, I mean, it's a good striker there. Mm-hmm. You got to, you know, sometimes I think you congratulate the goal scorer.
Yeah.
And I think he shows that he's a scorer, he's a poacher, he's a strong desire to score goals. And
but so on the corner, for example, you know, he ultimately gets a tap in from a few yards out. And so everything leading up to that opportunity, was there something you could have, the team could have done better to prevent that?
I would say probably. I got to look at it. I didn't look at the replay.
Okay.
You could always probably look back and joystick and say he could do a little bit here, he could do a little bit there. Our guys showed up on the night. They showed up on the night. Arango was relatively quiet on the night. It's always hard to stop those guys for the full length of the game. So I can tell you that I'm proud of the way our guys came out, the way they performed. They left everything out there. This is important for them, important for us, for our fans that showed up tonight. We'll go after it in our building.
We're back with Captain Keegan Rosenberg. We'll start off with his general thoughts and open it up to questions.
I think I usually would start off with disappointing, but I think, you know, everybody that follows this team knows that it stings a little bit extra, being the opponent that it is. But, you know, we get them a third time, and, you know, we're looking forward to that. This was a tough result, but we'll take it on the chin, and move on, and learn from it.
Braden Moose, Denver Post.
Hey, Keegan, thanks for the time, as always. Just what went wrong in the final 15 minutes or so? And for you, what kind of lessons can be learned for this kind of thing not to be replicated in the future?
Yeah, it's difficult to kind of pinpoint exactly what's going wrong. You know, in the moment, we'll learn from it by watching it back, seeing how the plays break down, seeing what we can do better on each play. But, you know, part of my message at halftime for the team was we wanted to learn from the San Jose game. And I felt like we did that. We came out in the second half. I didn't think we seemed scared. I thought we still went for it. We got the third goal. But again, you know, now we have something to learn from in addition to that. But I do think that this team has that ability to adapt, to learn from things, to learn from the experiences that we're having on the fly, and we'll do that. Sorry, I'm not giving you a specific answer for, you know, kind of each goal and breakdown, but like I said, we'll look at it this week and learn from it.
Paul?
Keegan, Chris and the defense has done a really good job of creating a more compact rest defense and then also dealing with transition plays better. But at least in my humble observation, when you guys are kind of put under a siege mentality, that's still, you know, an opportunity where you guys are still working on that. Cincinnati, you know, late second half tonight, late first half tonight. What's not working there, or what do you guys still have to improve on in those moments?
I think the challenge is trying to decipher the black and white of going after a team and pressing them, and then kind of sitting in a mid block, a low block, whatever that may be. It's in those moments where we get stretched just a little bit. Either our forwards get drawn out, or it's just that chain reaction kind of effect where it's just one after the other. We're just slightly late, and I think those are the moments that we're trying to get better at, and it's really difficult. You know, like I've said before, there's not really timeouts in soccer to kind of figure these things out, and you know, go back to the drawing board. It's us as a team and a loud stadium trying to communicate each other to okay, maybe this isn't the time to go. We should pull everybody back, just get compact and reset. And, you know, we talk about resetting a lot. Again, without seeing it back and watching some of the goals, I think those are usually the moments that cause us problems. And, you know, it hasn't just been this game. I think that's been in general. And I guess the only positive from that is I think we can, you know, it's preventable. I think we can change that. We can be in control of those moments. If we're, you know, the goal in this sport is to think collectively and all think the exact same things at the exact same time. And as you can imagine, it's a real challenge. And, you know, we'll try to get better at that.
Pablo, Matt Pollard, Burgundy Wave, good to see you again. There's been a lot of discourse between and among these two fan bases about how to feel about you. Rapids fans seeing you as a former legend who's now coaching at the other team, and RSL fans who maybe don't have positive memories of you originally, but you continue to win them over with the way that you coach. Do you care about that? Do you think about that? What do you say to Rapids fans who don't know how to feel about you?
Matt, with all due respect, this has nothing to do with me.
Okay.
I think this game, and I said this back then, or maybe I didn't know it back then, because I was a young naive coach. But this game is for the players. No one comes to see a coach. And for me, it's a fantastic rivalry. Chris Armas is doing a great job in Colorado. You know, he's got his team playing really well. And, regardless of what I say, the people that enjoyed me being in Colorado will still enjoy me. The guys didn't like me in Colorado still won't like me. So it's really a moot point.
Good to see you, Pablo. It's always good to hear how you think about the game and your place in the universe.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Zach, got 5 minutes for a dumb vlogger?
Sure.
Okay.
Of course. Where do you want to do it? See you, bud.
Better sound quality over here. How are you?
I'm a little tired right now.
Okay. Family's good?
Family's good.
Yeah.
A little bit easier to go to sleep tonight.
Yeah. So. Does Salt Lake feel like home now? Do you feel settled after all the
moving? Yeah, feel settled. Obviously, having my kids grow up here, definitely starting to feel like home, and we just feel settled.
Yeah.
So
I asked Pablo about the duality of his position in this rivalry, and he put it off in a very philosophical way that is emblematic of him.
Yep.
How do you think about how RSL fans might have felt about you, how Colorado fans think about you now? Do you care?
I definitely don't care too much, but I definitely have a soft spot for Colorado because I got engaged there, had my son was born there, I grew as a person there, I really became like a man, I felt like, in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And you know, spending time with Sharpie was a big influence on my career, so I owe a lot to Colorado, and they took a chance on me when I needed it. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate what they did. And then, you know, being here in Salt Lake on the other side, it's obviously just been, it's been great because our rivalry is dominated by us. So.
Not to draw comparisons to 2016, but, you know, you guys are, and when Pablo's been here, regularly doubted, and this feels legit and on another level compared to where you guys had been in the past. Like, where are expectations and the belief that this group can do something special?
I think our expectations are growing each week. You know, at the beginning of the season, we were definitely still figuring out those first four or five games. Now, I still think we're figuring out, but we're figuring out on the fly with confidence, and we're playing free. And the guys in the locker room look around and we're like, we don't fear any team now. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think years past, maybe we changed something because of the team we're playing against. Now I feel like teams are changing to the way we're playing.
Mm-hmm. This is, in terms of rivalry week, there was no matchup between what I would call traditional rivals that had two teams higher in the standings and on a higher combined points. And normally, historically, Rocky Mountain Cup has been kind of, you know, in the crapshoot because of where one or both teams are in the table and the fact that it's predictable in the result. Like, does this rivalry deserve more credibility nationally?
See you there. Yes, it does. And, you know, I think games like tonight prove that there's two very good teams in this rivalry. Yeah. And I think if, you know, both teams can continue to stay atop of the West, maybe meet in the playoffs or what have you, that's where, you know, this rivalry can really pick up steam again. So.
Is this one of the best, craziest MLS After Dark, MLS's drunk games that you've been in?
Certainly up there, yeah. definitely one of the best ones I've played in, thankfully on the right side of it. But yeah, that was something. I don't think I've heard America First Field with that ole ole chant late in the game. That was, I think, as buzzing of this place has ever been.
How much has Pablo changed as a coach in the time you've known him?
A lot. I think he has matured as a person, as a coach, and even more now as a manager. The way he speaks to the group, the way he takes care of his players, the way he involves his players. I think he was kind of learning on the fly when he was in Colorado, and it was, you know, I don't know what the description is, but he's just so much more calm about everything, and he really lets his players believe in themselves.
Mm-hmm. How much better? The knock on him was he didn't care about tactics, or it was ugly Pablo ball, and you guys have nuance to your game now. I would argue there was nuances to that 2016 team, but people on Twitter are going to be people on Twitter. How much has he evolved tactically?
I think he always was super tactical. You know, Pablo, what makes him a great coach and manager is he plays to the strengths of his players and what players he has. And maybe now, because of the players we have, we are maybe more tactical. But he's always been more tactical, or been tactical to me. And I think he's one of the great soccer minds in this nation.
Just my opinion. It was tough for you in Philadelphia when Andre Blake comes in. And with all due respect to Tim Howard, you were doing fantastic in 2016. Does it feel, are you at peace, or do you feel settled? You know, you're settled in RSL at home. You're settled, it appears, on the field. Like, are you happy with how you've elevated yourself as a goalkeeper?
I'm happier. I think there's definitely another level to my game. And, trying to find that consistency is, it's nice when your team's winning. So I'm going to continue to push the envelope. And I think being asked a lot to do, playing out of the back, and continuing to evolve and help the team and be a leader for the team.
How fun is doing stuff with the Unified team?
It's the best. Unfortunately, tonight didn't go our way. And you see how much these kids care. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they feel the same way we do after we lose. But the amount of joy these kids have playing, you know, the beautiful game is incredible. And a lot of them have a lot of tough hardships. And for them, the youth soccer is their outlet. It's awesome to see.
Zach, wonderful to see you.
Thank you very much.
See you in the summer, sir.
That sounds good. Thank you.
Hey, Rapids fans. It's 11:51 p.m. You just heard post-game audio from RSL goalkeeper and former Pitts goalkeeper Zach McMath, RSL head coach Paolo Mastroianni, Chris Armas, and Keegan Rosenberry. We're like 100 feet from the plane. I think the players just got on. We're about to get on the plane, so hopefully taking off 12:15 or so. We're about to get up. Feeling kind of down, exhausted, overwhelmed by what I just saw. Great experience, but a disappointing one in the end. But hey, the Rapids Unified team won 1-0 on an absolute banger in the 35th minute. So there's that. All right, we got to move.
Oh, sorry. I'm there.
Molly, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. What's your name?
My name's Matt.
Hi, Matt.
I cover the team for a website called Burgundy Wave, and I also do a podcast called Holding the Highline.
Oh, cool.
I've been covering the team since 2016. I'm aware of the Unified team. Schedules, amongst other things, have limited my ability to cover them.
That's okay.
I'm not criticizing the club at all. The fact that normally you guys are playing when I'm doing media and media availability with the first team. So, but here I am, and here we are, and we don't have to be anywhere for 20 minutes. So what's your role with the Unified team?
I'm the coach,
one of the coaches. Yeah. Okay. How long have you been doing this?
So I've been helping with the Unified team in some capacity since 2015.
Mm-hmm. What's the biggest joy? What's your why with working in this space?
It's really hard to pick just one.
Okay, let's start with one.
But I would say my biggest joy is sort of a combination of two things. Watching the athletes and partners grow together.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from that, watching the partners who've never done anything with Unified Sports really fall into their own and grow and thrive, and then take on other opportunities within Special Olympics. Mm-hmm. And just to see some of that passion and self-confidence come alive through Unified Sports.
Yeah. Would you say they become better allies to the community?
I would definitely say they become better allies. And
good evening and welcome aboard Sun Country Airlines Flight 8704 with service to Denver.
Our flight time into Denver tonight will be 58 minutes. 58 minutes of flight time.
Thank goodness.
As you find your seat, please place all smaller carry-ons under the seat in front of you and those larger items in an overhead bin. If you are seated in an exit seat, please review the selection criteria listed on the safety information card. Locate that pocket in front of you. Do not meet the requirements listed on that card if you're unable and willing. I just want to...
This interview is brought to you by Sun Country. I'm putting this on the pod, Emilio, just so you know. No, this is great. I'm doing like a live diary thing going on, so it's a very like NPR kind of a thing. So the static, the background noise, like if we could mix this together with like some munching of peanuts and everything, it would be, yes. This is why you subscribe to Holding the Highline, Rapids fans. Okay, becoming better allies in the community.
But I also think better mentors mm-hmm. and better people.
Mm-hmm. What's the... I'm a millennial. I'm 34 years old today. When I was in elementary... Thank you. When I was in elementary school, the R word was thrown out with regularity, and perceptions around members of this community were one of lack of understanding, one of demeaning... I don't know that xenophobia is the right word, but in a similar ilk.
Sure.
And so we're growing as a society, as obviously that's, you know, this is a more welcoming space, but there's still work to do.
Yes, I would agree.
Okay.
Yes, I have.
I don't know that was a question. I'm just talking out loud at this point. Where's there room to grow, or what more could the Unified team become, or what more could it help the community?
I think we have become the stakeholders
mm-hmm.
and the people who are making the biggest difference. It's allowing the other people to come alongside us and embrace
mm-hmm.
the strengths and the difference that people with special needs will make in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And to acknowledge that their abilities can far surpass
mm-hmm.
oftentimes what we give them credit for or what we feel as a society they're capable of. And I think that being cognizant and recognizing those abilities, focusing on the abilities rather than the disabilities or the label or the struggles are is much more important
mm-hmm.
and really leads the charge to them making a huge difference in mm-hmm. the community.
What's the club doing well to support you guys? How's that grown?
It has been fantastic. For example, all of the players this morning met up with our team and did a team walk, and it's just so special to see the camaraderie and the friendships, and I think the players just really celebrating our team has been really, really powerful. I also love that we just don't miss a beat together, and I think that that's really special, as well as after the game, the entire team and coaching staff were out celebrating, cheering us on, high-fiving. And I mean, we're flying on charters with them, and they're starting to put a face to the name and handshakes and high fives, and a lot of our athletes and partners look up to the Rapids players.
Mm-hmm.
So just developing those relationships has been really special.
Mm-hmm. I know the Unified team isn't necessarily about wins and losses, but what an absolute screamer to retain the Rocky Mountain Cup.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I like to win, but I think, you know, as I told the team before the game today, that when we have fun, play together, and work hard, those are wins for me. It doesn't necessarily show on the scoreboard or have to show on the scoreboard, as long as those three things are in place.
Mm-hmm. What would be your message to a member of the Rapids community or Rapids fan who's maybe Unified team curious, but maybe, you know, not has some work to do, but, you know, could better understand what this program is about and appreciate it?
I think just coming out and watching
mm-hmm.
Is really, really powerful and special. And I think mm-hmm. that's the first place to start for people, is to come and see how hard this team is working and what the partners and athletes individually and collectively bring together. Is just, it's a feel-good moment mm-hmm. for sure.
Molly, thank you so much.
You're
Let's
welcome.
Put on our seatbelts and get some
okay.
sleep.
All right. Thank
nice
you.
Good morning, Highliners. It is 2:40 a.m. Sunday, May 19th.
I am home. Got home safe. Thanks for asking. Charter flight was relatively seamless given the hour of the morning that we were in. Flight was a little bit less than an hour. Getting off the plane was relatively seamless. There's a whole clockwork and routine to how these charter flights and day trips go in MLS, and there's a organized chaos from the equipment team in terms of getting off the plane quickly, getting the stuff off the plane, getting people onto the buses and stuff onto the buses that needed to be there, and people out of the facility who drove there with their own stuff as well. And so that worked out pretty good. We were on our way within, you know, 15 minutes of getting off the plane. Obviously the players got off first, and, you know, then it was, you know, no traffic, 20-25 minutes probably once we pulled out of the airport to get back to Dick's, and then, you know, my drive home, which is, you know, normally 20 minutes when it's at this hour. So I still had fun this weekend. It was a really good experience. I got to cover a crazy and wildly entertaining game of soccer, and I want to thank the club for making this happen and setting it up to where it could work. This was the perfect time to do it in terms of logistically, in terms of all the stuff going on this weekend, not just with the first team playing in a derby. And I got to watch and see one of the most exciting regular season MLS games that I've. And so it's like rewatching a Greek tragedy that you've seen before, or like one of your favorite episodes of Game of Thrones, but it's one of the heartbreaking ones for one of those characters. And so there was some, you know, enjoyment or at least entertainment in that. In a weird way, this loss, I think, is extremely relatable to the human experience. Okay, I'm rambling. I'm going to go to sleep. Do I really get up in 6 hours just to watch City skate away with the Premier League trophy? I don't know. Probably, maybe. It's been a bad weekend for KSC teams, so I don't feel super optimistic about Arsenal. In any case, I would love some feedback on this. Do you enjoy this type of content? Are you jealous that I got to be inside the team bubble? Are you convinced that I am a shill who's working under the table and I am a psyop for the club? I'd love to know. If you want more of this stuff, great. If you like to see it but in a different format, please let us know what you would like that to look like. Okay, Rapids fans, I am going to bed. Good night. Talk to you next week with Rabbi Courage.